Welcome to another episode of the Coffee Roaster Warm-Up Sessions podcast. Friends, hopefully everybody is doing well. Hopefully everybody's doing quite dandy. Hopefully everyone's having a great couple first months of the year.
For some reason, I thought you were going to say something about the holiday season. I'm like, what am I missing? What holiday?
We can talk about holiday seasons.
Dude.
Holiday. Springtime.
Spring's
coming around. Just around
the corner. Right around the corner.
Yeah.
Do you celebrate Groundhog Day?
I do. I do. I don't know if it's worth
celebrating or it's just something you have in your calendar. Like, you wake up, you're like, what did the groundhog say? You
go out there, watch the live stream from, like, I don't know, it's some, like, Whoville or something out in Kentucky.
I hope the groundhog hasn't gotten canceled yet. I mean, you never know what the groundhog's up to.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. What do groundhogs do?
Do they live underground or is that moles? I honestly have no idea what a groundhog is and what species it is. My groundhog knowledge is at a bare minimum.
Like a squirrel on steroids or something.
Something like that. I mean, I thought the groundhog was connected to the queen. So when the queen passed, I thought maybe the groundhog left. I don't know. Like, I'm playing the ignorance card here. I have no idea. I need to be educated on the groundhog.
Well. Not bad.
I think slightly over-extracted. I mean, we tightened it up, but might have done a little too much.
Yeah, I don't know. I if you ask me, is this
coffee old?
It's definitely on the strong. Like, I don't want to say stronger because that's not the word.
Yeah,
but it's like a really, I don't know.
How much coffee? I mean? Yeah. How much coffee did you put? 50?
50, yeah, regular. Oh. 1 to 16, I think.
Nice.
But it tastes really well extracted. It's just a little, maybe on the borderline of over, but it's great. What do you mean?
Yeah, it's fine. It's a little syrupy.
You're still getting syrupiness.
Big-bodied. Yeah,
it's a very nice big-bodied. That's why I'm saying that it feels like strong almost. Mm-hmm. But it has this... like candied,
I don't know if that's far. Maybe some kind of candied. Oh. What coffee is this? This is a
Colombia, Wash Colombia.
Oh, nice.
Colombia Huila. Orange, pomegranate, red wine are the flavor notes on the bag.
Nice.
Don't taste any of them.
No.
Sorry, Portugal. I get it. I'm not on board with these notes.
I think I struggle with pomegranate.
There's a lot of... aren't you getting that like rich sweetness? Like in the... almost tastes... I don't know. There is like a rich... some kind of fruit sweetness like in the body. Yeah. And I think that might be the pomegranate and the wine. But...
yeah, I don't know. I think I tend to affiliate pomegranate as more of a tart and savory flavor. If that makes any sense. I hate calling out savory notes because it feels like they shouldn't be used in coffee. Well, that's not true. Not all savory thing. I'm not talking about like potatoes. You know, that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
Right. Or that's a defect, not a bad thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's nice. I think it's really nice. I think with the flavor notes, what I'm kind of pondering on is what part of red wine? Like, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about the tartness? Are we talking about the acidity? Are we talking tannins?
Especially since that's pretty wide.
Yeah. It's a boozy. It's not boozy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't, like, automatically when you see wine, you think of a natural, right? But it's not. It doesn't taste like that. So I'm trying to figure out what part of red wine.
No. don't know, but I'm enjoying this.
Yeah.
I like it a lot. It's really solid. And yeah. You know what's interesting, actually, speaking of Colombian coffees, I don't know who posted on Instagram the pie chart. Maybe it was Juan Diaz or of like in competition, the coffees used. It's insane. I didn't know it was that disproportionate. Yeah. I think it's like 80% Colombian coffees.
And Geshas.
Yeah. Was it Geshas?
Yeah.
Geshas, SL28s, SL34s, H1s,
maybe we're talking about
Ethiopian Land Race, and...
that's the same one we're talking about.
Yeah.
Cidra wasn't on it. Sudan Room and Eugenoides.
Oh, Eugenoides, yeah.
Yeah. I think I looked at the Brewers Cup one.
I don't know.
I think that was it. It was a shocking one, yeah.
But it's shocking, but it actually also, like... There's nothing shocking about, like, you know, it's kind of to be expected. I don't know, but
just trying to pull it up, but I can't find it. Yeah. But yeah,
I've had a, speaking of like that, like I've just had a, I mean, goes to show that Colombia, it's still like such a solid producing country. Yeah. Like it's a classic, you know, like when you go to like the store and it says like 100% Colombian coffee, like the from who knows where.
Yeah.
And they're still killer, like taking up so much space at competition. But we've had like a love-hate relationship with them.
I mean, our first coffee was a Colombian.
Our first one, yeah.
Yeah.
They're just a pain to roast us also.
Yeah. I mean, they're also like, yeah, some coffee, it's been just hit or miss.
Because
we've had... quite a bit of Colombian. I think Colombian Guatemalan coffees is the ones that we've had of the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So I love it. Like I think, what was it, 2 years ago when I was fully committed to the fact that some of my favorite coffees come out of Colombia.
Mm-hmm. I remember that, actually. Yeah,
so I was like, yep, kind of settled on that. There's so much diversity and flavor too. Like you can basically find any flavor profile in Colombia. Which is dope. Processing, almost all, and the leading.
Yeah, it is leading.
Yeah, leading experimental processing methods there. There's just so much good stuff going on out there.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Well, hopefully this year we can scoop up a couple of Colombians. I mean, our decaf right now is a Colombian decaf. It's a ripper.
Yeah.
It's truly amazing.
Yeah. Our anaerobic semi-washed. Is it anaerobic?
Oh, yeah. Dude, I forgot. Yeah. Why did I just forget about that? Yeah, we have two Colombians. Yeah. Oh,
the Java varietal.
The Java is a ripper as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very delicate, very nice.
Yeah.
And yeah, a flavor profile that I would never expect out of Colombia, but that just shows it's just a wide range. Yeah.
I mean, there's many times when we cupped it. And we both said, like, this tastes like an Ethiopian.
Yeah, like a delicate washed Ethiopian. Guji or something like that.
I mean, it was
grown
on the same farm as Geshas, so it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. So. But in today's episode, we just want to talk about roast consistencies because, you know, I think to just kind of kick us off, I think the being in the industry where... we're kind of competing on quality and standards and flavor profiles and everything is just so, has to be so exact and detailed. It's both good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
Good, it's fun. It's a thrill. It's exciting. It's a challenge. But on the other side, I think there are some things that come with it that make it really challenging because, what do you do with stuff that's not up to par?
Mm-hmm.
What do you do with stuff with roasts that might have gone just a little different than what you expected, a little different than the reference curve? And something we've experienced over the years is that there's actually a lot of waste that comes with that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's just the reality of it. Like, do you sell a bag of coffee even though it's not up to your quality standards that you've cupped because a roast happened to do something wonky? And that's, you know, the reality is that happens.
Yeah.
Like your consistency can be excellent, mm-hmm. but still, even with that, there are flukes that yep. you're just like, why the heck did it just dip down really low when I did everything the same as mm-hmm. the last three roasts,
right.
and this one behaved differently, yep. you know? And so the difficulty there is, if you're upholding this high quality standard, mm-hmm. do you take the loss? Do you throw it away? And at the end of the day, especially for, you know, small, fairly small roasting company like us, all of a sudden the costs start raking up and yep. it introduces some challenges.
Yeah. And I think an important thing to mention is all of these things that you're discussing are very personal matters. This is something we decide. This is something we set. We make a point to call this high quality and call this doesn't meet our standard. Mm-hmm. So with all of that said, like when we're doing everything from like cupping, like watching the curve and deciding, yeah. oh, is this a good one or is this not a good one?
Yeah.
We're making that call based on something that we've seen and experienced and understood.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important frame of reference, because at the end of the day, if you're not us and you're experiencing our coffee, depending on your flavor preferences or depending on what, how good of a taster or how good of a brewer you are or what machine you have at home, all of our coffees might be up to par. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, yes. And depending on who you are, maybe none of our coffees are up to par. Mm-hmm. So I think that's very important preface to set before we continue to talk about some of the things that we do to make sure that we set things into up to our standard. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because that's a very valid point. Mm-hmm. And I think for us as roasters, as people who cup this coffee, and we're the closest we, you know, anybody is yeah. to the bean itself. So mm-hmm. we know the coffee from when we just get samples of it. We yeah. know the coffee when we're dialing it in. We mm-hmm. know the coffee when we're cupping our production roast regularly. Mm-hmm. All those things play, you know, give us more and more knowledge of what this coffee is capable of doing. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're always constantly yes. measuring to, according to. And of course, that's our preference.
Yeah.
You know. And I think something, you know, shout out to Mark Michelson, who said, you know, you're only as good of a roaster as you are a cupper or a mm-hmm. taster. And that's the reference. That's what we're playing yeah. from. But then we're also dealing with roasting, which I think especially over the last like 7-8 months, mm-hmm. we've noticed the craziness of roasting, of how delicate it could be.
Yeah.
Like, man, we've cupped coffees that are seemingly so close yep. on the curve, but the results on the cupping table, mm-hmm. it's like it's noticeable. Yep. And I don't know if we're just like crazy or if this right. is like a placebo effect, but we're yeah. like, oh no, these two things are fairly noticeable different.
Yep.
But on, and the roast, I mean, come on.
Yep. And also because this is what, year three, right? Year three? Yeah. Or is it already year? No, three, year three, three, not four. Because it's been a few years, we've collected enough data or information that we can basically evaluate that and categorize that and put that into a plan or what we're talking about, like a system, in order to be able to make different decisions and make the calls. I remember one of the most monumental, at least for me, it was one of the most monumental shifts that we made in our whole company process is what and how we store green.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Because that, not only did that change our roasting approach and our dial-in approach, that also changed in how we basically, how much green we buy. So it was crucial for us to be like, oh, okay, like after this point, the green is going to fade. And if we keep it at this temp, it's going to fade more. So we need to find that middle ground where we buy enough green. Yeah. So I think that was probably the biggest system that I remember us putting in place to know, like, hey, when temps hit this, we need to do this. And yeah. when we buy coffee at this point in the year, we need to prepare to move this coffee at this rate.
Yeah.
So,
and, yeah. Yeah. And I think with that goes with that. I mean, even when, as the seasons change here mm-hmm. in Washington, especially like spring and fall, I'm really we're really noticing and being very aware of yep. what that's doing to our curves, what that's mm-hmm. doing to our green, because our temperatures are fluctuating mm-hmm. here so much. And so we're just an intention of like, hey, we want to live up to this quality that mm-hmm. is subjective, that is up to what we want mm-hmm. and the standard that we want to roast to and serve coffee at. Mm-hmm. But then we also don't want to serve coffees that are not on par with that. And yeah. so sometimes that means that we have to throw away a batch,
yep.
which is never fun.
Yep.
Because I mean, you're throwing away really solid green, yeah. let alone it's increasing costs, mm-hmm. let alone it's taking more time. And we've even had coffees where we've roasted and looking at the numbers at the curve and we're like, I'm not fully convinced this is going to taste great.
Yeah.
So let's just in case, let's throw in another batch.
Yep.
Just so we can have that on hand, and then we'll cup it and see how far that is away from yeah. from what's really good.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden now you means you have an extra batch.
Yeah.
If it's good, great.
Yeah.
You can maybe sell it somewhere if it's not that far off.
Yeah.
But if it's far off, then you throw it away.
Yep.
And so I think systems are so important because they maximize your efficiency. They maximize your quality level, essentially they maximize your efficiency and your quality level mm-hmm. without, and minimize your mistakes, minimize yep. hiccups along the road. However, just because you have really solid systems, it doesn't mean everything's going to be perfect.
Yeah.
However, if you're a roaster and if you might not have a system set in place or specific mm-hmm. protocols, that's making it really difficult on yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one of the things that even Scott mentioned to us when we were asking roasting questions.
Yeah.
Even backing up to not even operations, but how you roast your coffee requires a plan and a system.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that is to make sure that you're as productive as you can within that time reference that you have prepared for roasting, or simply consistency and repeatability. And then all of that data that you have actually makes so much more sense when you have a system in place. So everything that you're saying is like absolutely crucial to running not only a quote unquote successful roasting company, because mm-hmm. we're talking about flavor here. And I think a lot of the times how successful you are in roasting is dictated by how tasty your coffee is.
Yeah.
We're in the business of flavor.
Of course.
So that will dictate your success level, but not only that, it'll dictate your like productivity level.
Yeah.
Because let's say we decided to, we won't waste coffee and we won't roast that second batch. And then we go to cup that batch and that batch is absolutely awful. So we have a choice. We either wait and not send any coffee to whoever bought coffees, or we have to fire up the roaster and roast one batch, yeah. which is very inefficient.
Yeah.
To those of you roasters, like to warm up and cool down the roast itself for a, 10 to 12 minute batch yeah. is just a lot of wasted time.
Yeah.
So you have to have things in place. And before that, what makes us even think should we roast a second batch? And that's a whole nother system. That's yeah. how yeah. we look at data on Cropster. We know that because we've cupped this coffee numerous amount of times, we know if it's half a degree here, or we didn't hit our DTR percentages in the right place. Mm-hmm. We know those things and their basic, the basic range. We know that range, therefore we know when to re-roast or add another batch,
Go ahead. And I think it's not just, for us, because we're roasting, we have set roast days. We don't roast every single day of the week. Right. Yeah. So that, yeah, there's some efficiency issues, because it sucks to have to fire up the roaster for one batch of one coffee.
Yeah.
But I think if you're completely loaded all week,
right,
going back to do another batch is like,
yeah,
well, you either have to stay late or come in earlier, exactly. And that's causing hiccups in your, because you're so pressed one against the other. Mm-hmm. And so these systems are crucial to be able to, and we've had, there are definitely things that we look out for, and there are things like, I think at the cupping levels where just the fact that we're cupping constantly is also a system, and that system is usually what's bringing, that's kind of the foundation for all the other systems to be built on. What kind of systems do we have in place?
I mean, one we've mentioned, you know, Cropster, or before even that, even how we choose coffees, right? We don't just pull up an offering list and say, man, that coffee reads great on paper, let's buy it. Or, oh, that coffee was graded by some Q grader at an 87. Like, let's just buy it. No. Our plan is to get samples that are intrigued. We have that intrigue us. We have relationships with importing companies. They kind of know our flavor preferences. We get those in, we cup them, and we make a decision on that. That's a system in itself before we even, you know, bring in those coffees. So, and I think that one is crucial. Like a lot of the times we kind of forget about that one, but that is the starting point and how we make the big decision. So that's one. The other one, I think, is what we talked about, the green coffee storage and how we store coffee, the temps that we look at for storing coffee, and then the temps that we roast coffee at. That was incredible because that changed a lot of how things taste, even though all of our numbers, all of our curves, all of those elements that usually we use, which is another system that we usually use for making sure our quality standard is set, and it wasn't adding up. We're like, what else could it be, you know? And then Scott helped us figure out that it's probably the green. So that was major. I think that was a big one. And then finally, I just mentioned it, like Cropster, the way we read our graphs, that's a major system that helps us make decisions so that we know what to do with that. So, I mean, and like you said, cupping, that's a big one.
What about roasting specific?
Like in the roasting process? Yeah. I mean, how detailed do we want to get? Like the first thing that comes to my mind, like literally the way we log things in Cropster. I know folks who roast basically take a curve, coffee is dialed in, and then they're just following the graph and making the gas changes according to the profile and the dial. But we actually log every gas change no matter what. Mm-hmm. So there is not a single roast that we don't log. So we've roasted, I don't know, a lot of roasts now. And if you look back at our Cropster, you can find every single roast and see where our gas changes or where anything in the roasting process was made. So I think that's a major one. That's a very big system. To even dial it into even more detail, even the way you change gas on the machine, because our machine is manual, the way you change it and the way you log it is important, because remember, like, that whole roast is moving. It's not waiting or pausing for you to log in that gas change. Yeah. The way we drop coffees. I mean, I can keep on going. We do have, now that I think about it, we have like a freaking dial system for a lot of these things. We have SOPs in our Google Drive and how we warm up the roaster.
Yeah.
That's a very big system. So
there's a lot of things I think that we subconsciously I've just started doing over time, and I've just stuck around with them and make very sometimes occasional changes to them according to like things we're learning or things we're figuring out. I think our integration with Cropster software, and people ask, you know, is it worth paying for Cropster when you can have, what is it, Artisan that's free? And it's like, yeah, 100%. That's what roasting That's that. I mean, that's the bread and butter right there. Mm-hmm. And in Cropster, we're, you know, it's everything from DTR to end temp to roast time to development time to the different probes that we have it's recording to how we log. Like, we read color of our coffees fairly often. Even if a coffee roasted fairly the same, if it's tasting slightly different, we're taking color reading. Yeah. Because we want to know, did it go a shade darker? Yeah. Did it go a shade lighter? Mm-hmm. And is that what's contributing to the color? And so a lot of these things we have in place that allow us to operate the way we operate. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I can see us even growing and changing our our system as we move on to accommodate, whether that's as we grow, as we're continually growing and roasting more coffee, roasting different coffee, but also as we're just simply learning and becoming better roasters and learning the machine and all this stuff, that's going to require some kind of change.
Right.
And I think, I think these systems, we even have like, the fact that like we have a standard that we function under, but when things go wrong, I think it's healthy to have a system for when things go wrong.
Yep.
When a roast doesn't go as planned, what do you do? When it doesn't cup the same way, what do you do? When all these things, you kind of have to have that built out and have those plan Bs so that you can function pretty flawlessly as a roasting company. Even if that means part of your system is, hey, if it's not up to par, you toss the batch.
Yeah.
You take the loss. And that's something that we've talked about as well. Is like, for the sake of, you know, the people buying our coffee, for the drinkers, I'm always asking myself, what would happen if somebody tries this bag for the first time of Mir?
Yeah.
Is this up to par with what I want them to try? Mm-hmm. And if it's not, I might consider going as far as saying we just need to toss it.
Yeah.
And that's part of the game. I'm sorry. And that's it sucks, but
it's hard. Yeah, it's very hard. And I mean, I think I'll be honest with all the listeners, some little bit of vulnerability from Sergi here. I have a hard time with that. I have a very hard time with that. Not to say that I don't want high quality stuff. Like, that's where my heart is. Like, I want the best coffee all the time, every single batch. Mm-hmm. But I have, knowing the costs that go in, knowing the work that we put in, I struggle a lot with tossing a batch. A lot. Like, my mind goes like, okay, maybe I can donate this coffee. Maybe I can, like, what can we do apart from grinding it and throwing it into the garden? Yeah. Like, what are some, even that, like, to me is like, okay, well, maybe it'll enhance the garden. Those tomatoes in mom's greenhouse are going to be like freaking bonkers. Yeah. They'll have flavor notes of blueberries. Like, I don't know, but like, that's where my mind goes, because it is hard. But at the end of the day, what you're saying is so sobering and so true, because if even like a friend of mine or not a friend of mine, I encounter so many people who drink Mir and I don't even know about it. You know, and I either get a DM or I get it, like, someone comes into even narrative and is like, oh, I had some Mir coffee and it was wild.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't know. And to know that someone will have a bag of our coffee for the first time and that roast was their first impression of what Mir creates, it's a lot of pressure. Yeah. And I think that pressure outweighs the pressure of what am I going to do with this wasted batch?
100%. There is definitely a sense of pressure, and I think that's to a certain extent appropriate. There should be some pressure. You know, if you're trying to be the best, if you're trying to offer like what we say, like an exceptional experience, like an experience that is memorable to you, that's the standard that we're holding ourselves to, you know. And I think it's a whole other conversation to talk about, like, there are some things that in play as a roaster that you could do that maybe you can salvage it in some ways. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not great for, not perfectly on par for filter, but maybe for cold brew it might work. Or, you know, who knows, whether that's even donating it. Like, a lot of people might really value and appreciate, you know, a 5-pound bag of, you know, a donated coffee, but it just, because they might not care. Yeah. They may not be able to taste the difference, but it's better than throwing it away.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not to say like you should donate your trash to somebody. No, that's not what we're saying.
Yeah.
But
if we donate to our mom, yeah, like that's a good example.
And for context, yeah. I think what we're talking about is literally like 2 degrees.
Yeah.
In a roast, that's an extra 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Like that, where it's like a lot of people might not even taste the difference, mm-hmm, but for us, and that's where conviction, just personal accountability, that just steps in, and that, yeah.
Apart from that one coffee where I think we dropped it, what, like 15 degrees below drop.
Oh, gosh, yeah. That was that a coffee huge
didn't
fluke.
Even work for a latte art. Like, ask Justin. He's like, even pouring in that coffee was bad.
We've also done that. Like, yeah. Hey, if it goes bad, just it's a latte art.
Practice.
Yeah.
Just, comp is coming up.
Yeah.
No, great. For sure. It's, yeah. Yeah, I value systems. I love systems. They make me happy. They just also give you like peace of mind. You don't have to make decisions if you put a system in place, because you made one big decision and now you know that like if this happens you need to do this, and it frees up space in your head to be able to think about other things. Yeah. Create more systems.
Yeah.
And I think that at the end of the day, that's the point, is to give you peace of mind. One, knowing that, mm-hmm, you sent these bags and these bags really do reflect what's good, and two, you don't have to worry about like making that call.
Yeah.
You know, adds confidence.
Yeah, that's excellent. Systems are great, but I'll say I hate making them. I hate going through the process, because it's just like, it just feels like a drag. Like, why? Yeah. But you're right. It frees up a lot of brain space.
So. I mean, you even told me today, like, dude, that cold brew, like you did that cold brew so quick. Well, yeah, because I've made it so many times and I have a plan.
True,
I need to go pick up my water now before I get to the office. And then I need to make my water and build my water in a batch. Like,
If this podcast episode was at all helpful or beneficial or just entertaining, maybe you're not even a roaster, it's just entertainment. Yeah. Guys, give us a little review on Apple Podcast. Half of you are listening on Apple Podcasts and half of you are listening on Spotify. That's kind of the main two biggest platforms. Yeah. So if you're on there, friends, give us a little review, add a couple stars. It helps a lot. Yeah. We're trying to get this podcast out to more and more people. Mm-hmm. If you're on YouTube, drop a comment down below, hit that like button, do all the good stuff. You guys know, why am I telling you? Yeah. As if you guys don't listen to podcasts. Yeah. This is just a small little reminder. But anyways, friends, thank you so much for tuning in once again to another episode of the Coffee Roaster Warm Up Sessions podcast. And we'll see you next week with an episode potentially about Origin, because I may be gone. But we'll see. I don't know.
Teaser.
Yep. Alrighty, folks. Thank you for listening. And as always, reflect what's good.